Hey guys, did you know that you can subscribe to the Investor Coaching Show podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts? When you subscribe, you get notifications with new episodes so you never have to go looking for an episode or worry about what you've missed. So if you're on your phone or computer, go ahead and pause the episode real quick and become a subscriber. If you're not sure how to subscribe, go to paulwinkler.com/how-to-subscribe, all one word, how to subscribe, for instructions, or click the link in the show note. Now let's get started.
Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
All right. I'm back here on the Investor Coaching Show. Paul Winkler, talk about world of money investing. There is a new Democratic proposal, and this was something that I ran into this week in one of the financial planning magazines that I get. And it was talking about Democratic proposals would limit the ability of investors to hold many private and alternative investments in retirement accounts. Apparently, it really got under their skin, that guy that bought some of his own company's stock and grew it like crazy in a Roth IRA. It was just basically life's lottery. I mean, it just took off like crazy. And he, got so much money into his Roth IRA that, Congress looked at it and said, oh, wait a minute, we can't get any tax money out of this thing. We got to stop this stuff right away. Not that I would disagree with some of the things that they're looking at stopping, but this was interesting. They're talking about these private and alternative investments in retirement accounts. And they said, in essence, some of these self-directed retirement accounts, they're a popular way, and sometimes the only way, for the merely affluent to have access to these investments. So, you might find somebody that actually goes and invests in some kind of a self-directed IRA. You may have heard of these before. I've talked about them a little bit before. And with much trepidation. This is part of a wide-ranging tax package proposed by the House Ways and Means Committee. They would limit the ability of IRA and retirement account holders to invest in certain alternative investments that are often associated with wealthy and sophisticated investors. I would question whether they're sophisticated or not, because I've seen a lot of sophisticated investors lose a ton of money, as I often point out. Who are the investors that have been typically gotten taken in by some of the investment scams? Historically, it has been hedge fund managers supposedly investing for sophisticated investors. It's an outgrowth of the fear over a billionaire. That $5 billion holding, and I've talked about that before, in his Roth IRA. However, in their efforts to curtail some of the strategies used by the ultra-rich, the Democratic proposal would limit the ability of smaller investors, including some of your clients, remember, written to the financial planning community, to fully diversify their retirement accounts with alternatives. And I would suggest that that's not really true diversification, investing in alternatives. A lot of this stuff is just commodities, and commodities have no expected return above inflation. Look back at one of the most notorious commodities out there, which would be gold, and we would look at that and say, well, an ounce of gold 100 years ago bought a men's suit. $100, basically that same ounce of gold buys a good men's suit today. So there's been no return after inflation. Really gets down to it. Self-directed retirement accounts used to invest in assets of mainstream custodians will not allow in IRAs. If you go to a mainstream custodian, a big investment firm, you can't go and buy like a real estate, like a house, and put your rental property inside of an IRA. You have to have a self-directed. And there are all kinds of rules, and it can be really, really, you can get into self-dealing challenges. And all of a sudden, you can end up disqualifying your IRA. And the custodians don't take responsibility for that kind of stuff. So it's really, really can be really hazardous and put you in a position where you can end up with a huge loss on your hand, a tax loss, and a big liability. And you just kind of don't know what hit you is really what ends up happening for a lot of people that end up with these you know, these self-directed IRAs that, you know, maybe step out of line without necessarily recognizing it. Private debt and private equity investments, which I talk about all the time, stay the heck away, simply because the reason companies remain private is that they don't have to disclose information. That was the big problem back in before the Depression, is that people were buying companies and buying stock in companies, and they had no clue what those companies had in terms of profits. They had no clue what they really had in terms of assets because they didn't have to disclose any of this information. Then all of the investor acts of the 1930s actually changed that. So all of a sudden now we have lots of information. It's all public. That's why we call them publicly traded companies. It's very public information. And we don't have to worry about what's hidden as much. I mean, it doesn't mean that you can never have, you know, you look at Enron and Global Crossing and those types of things, and, you know, sometimes things do slip through the cracks. But for the most part, we have much, much better information. You don't have that information on private equity. And as a friend of mine who was out in California, they were actually working with some of the private pensions or the big pensions out there in California, and he was on the board and made a comment about how typically the private equity investments that people got a hold of, that they were able to invest in the general public or went through their investment firms, it was the junk. It was the garbage of the industry that they actually got into. And it was very interesting, the research that he brought back to me one day. It says hedge funds and private equity funds can be held there as well. And then crowdfunding investments and doing those types of things, it's all in these self-directed accounts that these things are held. Well, that's what they're looking at actually changing. And it'd be really, really interesting. Two proposed rule changes for retirement accounts could limit the ability for investors to invest in alternative assets inside a retirement account. One part would be, you know, you've got, you know, retirement account, and they would require a minimum level of assets or income on the part of the account holder. So it'd be like accredited investors. You know, if you've got enough money, we don't care if you lose money. You're no big deal. You've got enough. You don't need any more. We'll let you go and invest in things where you lose a bunch of money. That's kind of the accredited investor thing that I often talk about. The proposal reduces the threshold from 50% to 10% of the level of controlling interest in any entity that an investor can hold in their retirement account. So again, a shot at anybody that's trying to invest in their own companies and put that inside of an IRA or something like that. They also have income levels that are related to that. Income of $200,000 or $300,000 jointly for each of the prior 2 years, and then net worth of $1 million. That's the accredited investor. So that's where I was saying, you know, you've got enough money. If you got that much income, you got that much in assets, you can afford to lose money. So that is, in essence, what they're talking about, is a possibility of going and closing that stuff. So if you didn't like cryptocurrencies, people wanting to go and buy Bitcoin and put it in their IRAs, that's one of the things that they're actually looking at making changes at. Now, that wasn't the only change that they had talked about. There's some other things that they were playing around with, and one of them was the backdoor Roth IRA strategy, that it might not last. So there are all kinds of stuff out there. Yeah, so a lot of decisions, I've been having clients just kind of hang on, let's wait, let's just kind of watch things, because there are all kinds of possible changes coming down the pike, and we just don't know which ones are going to stick. This one, there was a commentator that is really well known in the IRA community, and Slot is his name, and he actually says that this one has a pretty good chance of going through. And it's this idea of the backdoor Roth strategy. The strategy, the idea is, let's say if you have a big 401k and you're contributing to the 401k and you're no longer able to contribute to a Roth IRA because your income is too high. You know, so what do you do? You go, oh, God, well, I don't know. What do we do? Well, we can contribute to a regular IRA, you know, a non-deductible regular traditional IRA. Well, you're not able to deduct it. Well, basically what you do is you put money into it. Then what you do is you pull it right back out and you drop it into a Roth IRA. And that way, it's a back door. You slid through the back door to be able to contribute to a Roth IRA. And the idea behind the Roth IRA is that it grows without tax forever. Well, many Americans are using previously little-known tax method to boost their savings. Now the government's trying to stop it. tax strategy at issue is the mega backdoor Roth conversion. Now, you've never heard me talk about this because so few people actually ever really qualify for it. So it's not something I talk about here on the show very much, if ever. But in essence, what the idea was is this, is that you have a 401k, let's say. And some 401ks allow for directing the money outside. You can actually pull and do an in-service distribution and distribute the money outside the 401k, roll it over, and they'll also have a provision in there that allows you to put money in after you've maxed it out, what you can put away, you know, the $19,500. That what you can do is this. You know, it basically says, okay, here, your mega backdoor Roth IRA allows you to put up to $38,500 of tax after tax dollars in a Roth IRA or Roth 401k in 2021 if you have these types of provisions in your 401k. Add the regular contribution limits, $19,500, and you know, $26,000 if you're over 50 for these accounts, and then you can contribute up to $58,000 in total. And if you have a Roth 401k at work, let's say, and the plan allows for a mega option, which is where you go and have these abilities to move it out, then you can choose whether the final destination of your mega contribution is a Roth 401k or Roth IRA. And if your employer only offers a traditional 401k, then your mega contributions would end up in the Roth IRA. You know, so you know that's in essence how you sneak the money back in. If the plan doesn't allow the in-service withdrawals, though, then your opportunity to do a mega backdoor is delayed until you leave the job because you have to have a separation from service. Normally, you have to leave your money in your 401k. Some people have the ability to do in-service distributions, and I've used those with a lot of clients, where you're able to go and pull the money out of the 401k and go anywhere. Because a lot of times your 401k doesn't have really great options. Or you know, like you might have some okay stuff in the United States. You typically don't have much of anything great outside the United States. 401ks aren't noted for having lots of good choices. But this is a way to pull the money out and go and stick it in and do the Roth and be able to put a bunch of money in there. That's the idea behind the mega backdoor. And the idea being able to, you can get a lot more money in. Well, that's what they're looking at possibly getting rid of. Now, they would also possibly totally get rid of the backdoor Roth IRA strategy with this, which I think would kind of stink because, you know, the most commonly used scenario for the backdoor Roth IRA is you're doing these little contributions, you know, like the $6,000 into a regular IRA and then converting it over to a Roth IRA. Now, this only works if you don't have a regular pre-tax IRA. It only works if you have this big 401k. You don't have any IRA outside that because otherwise they aggregate it and it gets really, really messy. But I think the point here is this. If they do this, it could be a sad thing just because it's one good way to get money into a Roth IRA for some people that just don't qualify for it. Because their income's a little bit too high, and you can't go and put money in your 401k and a Roth IRA because the income limits are too low for you to have that ability to do that. It's a way to get around that. And, you know, the reality of it is so many people have a hard time saving for retirement. Why go and take away stuff from them? But, you know, that's Congress. You know, you just got to realize that they're going to do that, and you got to keep up with all these little changes. I think this one is, yeah, possibly the mega one. And it looks like that might be something that actually flies through, according to Ed Slott. He's the guy that does a lot of newsletters on IRA strategies and for years been one of the experts in that particular area. But, you know, that's a couple things to keep in mind as I've gone through in this segment. Number one, the ability to go and do some of these alternatives in your Roth IRAs and IRAs may very well go away if they have their way, and the back door may actually go away. So if it's a strategy you're using, it may be something you're no longer able to use. Their estimate as to when this would go away would be 2022 as to when they're going to stop that. So we'll just keep an eye on it, check it out, and go from there. And I'm sure if it happens, I will be talking about it right here on the show. All right.
Let's change gears now.
Saw something in FedWeek.com regarding possible retirement savings limits increases. The amount of money that you can put in IRAs, well, 401ks, 403bs, those types of things, they change every once in a while. And typically they change based on cost of living, you know, got increases inflation. Now they're talking about, in this particular case, the Fed program, which is the Thrift Savings Plan. That is something that they are looking at for federal employees, how much money you can put into those. Now, given the state of the economy, they said in recurrence inflation, it is highly likely that the amounts that are allowed to be set inside of the Thrift Savings Plan, which is $19,500, and that's the same thing for your 401ks, you know, 403bs and other retirement plans that you might have at work, might go up by $1,000 to $20,500 for 2022. And the amount that you can contribute to an IRA, $6,000, will probably remain the same for 2022. There was something I saw in another article talking about the way they do the rounding may actually keep it at that level. Catch-up contributions for the Thrift Savings Plan and your 401ks, it's $6,500 is for that, and that's where you get the $19,500 plus $6,500, where you can get put $26,000. Into those types of programs, and the IRA, it's $6,500 for the TSP and $1,000 the IRA. They're thinking that's going to remain the same, and they said that if you have those types of programs, you might be able to put a little bit more into the 401ks and those retirement plans. TSP does not have the same income limits that affect contributions, but IRAs do. So the past, even those years of negligible inflation, the limits have crept upwards. Might see some more increases for 2022. Full deduction allowed. And this is the situation. If you have, let's say, a retirement plan and you try to contribute to an IRA, if your incomes are too high, you can't contribute to both, you know, because they have thresholds. And for 2021, if the income is below $66,000, you can contribute. If it's above that, you start to get phased out. They're looking at increasing that to $68,000. So if your upper income for single people, anywhere from $68,000 to $78,000, you got a phase out where you can't contribute to both of them. And then they're looking at if you're married jointly, they're looking at $109,000 to $129,000 to be able to do that. Now, I also thought it was interesting because I've had several clients that work with the government and they have the thrift savings plans. One of the things I've always said about the thrift that has bugged me is the way they diversify it. Typically, they have five funds that most people will diversify between. Now, they'll do the L funds with their like life strategy type of funds based on when you're going to retire. You know, if you're going to retire in 2040, you just buy the L2040 fund, and that's it. And one of the things that I have told people over the past several years is that they have thought about adding more diversification to the Thrift Savings Plan. But they've just been holding back. And the reason they tend to hold back is because investors, when given too many choices, tend to freeze. You know, I got too many flavors of ice cream, so I'm not eating any ice cream. Just forget it. I'm not having any. I got, you know, 83 flavors. I'm going on a diet this week. It's the same thing with investing. There are too many choices. People do nothing, which is just kind of makes me go, really? Yeah, they got the G fund, and G fund is just a fixed fund, and they got the F fund, which is intermediate government bonds, and they got the C fund, which is large U.S. stocks, and the S fund, which is what's called a completion index. It just basically picks up where the S&P 500 leaves off, and it just buys all those companies that are smaller than the 500 biggest companies. Then you got the I fund, which is large international, and what I've said many, many times is that really needs to be changed. And they actually thought about doing it. They actually thought about implementing some of the value research that won the Nobel Prize. But, you know, they said, we're not going to do it. They decided to ditch the effort last I saw. Now, the value stocks tend to outperform growth stocks in 96% of 20-year periods historically. You know, so there's a pretty good reason for owning value companies. And it also very, very good diversifier. And then you're looking at small companies typically outperforming large companies in 83% of 20-year periods. And this is a case in point. If you look at the last year, if you look at the C fund, it's you know, 1 year return is 29%, which isn't bad. But if you were better diversified, you'd be over 50% return over that same period of time. Small companies, their S fund is up 42. I looked at Vanguard, it's 44, not much better. Fund that's more asset class driven, like something that I would use where you've got more smaller companies. You know, typically the problem with index funds is you're holding larger companies. And that's what I always say, that they weight based on size. It is weighted based on the value of the company. So if I got two companies, the example I like to use when I'm teaching a workshop is, so I got a $3 billion company, I've got a $1 billion company. Both of those companies are in my index fund, and I'm investing in $4. They're going to put $3 in the $3 billion company and $1 in the $1 billion company. They'll weight it based on the size of the company. And that's a problem to me. You know, indexing is very, very lazy and not so great with value companies and small companies. Well, you take that 42% return, 44 for Vanguard, and it should be above 50, above 60% for microcaps. You know, so it's a big difference when you're looking at long-term returns when you're dealing with smaller companies and really holding smaller companies. International, their iFund's up 26%. Where you got, you know, better diversify, it should be up 30, 40% really over that same period of time. So they really ought to diversify it more, but probably not anytime soon. Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. You want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.